come fly with me.
Welcome to Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
Yesterday on Travelers 411 in hour one, I had on a good friend who I had the pleasure of being with in Springfield, Massachusetts, at the John Boyle Irish Club there, because Derek Warfield and the Young Wolftones were performing. And a good friend, thank you, Pat Gormley from Berkshire County, let me know, because I must have missed the email that went out about it. And so my husband and I took off to go and be there with the Berkshire Irish American Club, of which we are members, either, although neither of us have any Irish background that we can find. But they, unlike the Ancient Order of Hibernians, the Berkshire Irish American Club lets in mutts like us. And so we joined the folks from Pittsfield and other places in Berkshire County who are members in Springfield to be at this most wonderful, uplifting, fabulous, joyous concert performed by Derek Warfield and the Young Wolftones. And I have to tell you, I woke up the next morning with all the music dancing in my head. Happily, it's still there. I haven't lost it yet. And so I had Derek on yesterday, and there's so much that we need to talk about that when we ran out of time in the first hour, I asked if he could come back today, and he's here with us. And we're going to be talking with Derek Warfield right after this.
Portions of today's show brought to you by Incredible Malta, where seascapes, landscapes, great food, beach and city resorts, and wonderful inhabitants make Malta a must-visit experience. For details, go to visitmalta.com.
I have on the line Derek Warfield, the founder of the Young Wolftones.
And the Wolftones.
And the Wolftones, too.
Yes.
But the Young Wolftones were founded, what, in 2000, 2001, something like that?
2003.
And
I found the old band, the Wolftones, back in 1963. Yeah, we were the band existed for 40 years.
You know, yeah. We have an album, an LP at home of the Wolftones, yeah. That I think...
It's an antique now, remember that, Stephanie?
Well, I want to, you know, I should have brought it with me, because I'd love for you to sign the album cover.
Bring it the next time I see you, bring it with you.
I'm going to have to. And I think the album we have was produced in 1969, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, you bring it the next time, I'll sign it.
And I had no idea who you were or who the other fellows in the band were, but we fell in love with you and your music, and long before I ever had a chance to meet you.
Well, that's great. I know where, you know, all the years, 55 years now I'm performing, and the one thing that really satisfies me and gives... that keeps me going is the fact that there's so much value placed on the music that I've brought around the world over the last 50 years. So it's been that probably is the greatest respect that can be paid by anybody, is that the love they have for the music is lasting, and it doesn't you know, music can come and go, but you know, our songs and our music says so much about life and about Ireland and about its history and about its economic and social history, that it has an everlasting appeal to people, and it's something. It's a great treasure. It really is a wonderful treasure. And well, not every race of people or cultures have it, but I'm very proud of it, and I'm very proud to be part of them spreading, if you like, the love of that music over my lifetime.
Yeah, but necessity is the mother of invention. Given the oppressive regimes under which the Irish had to try to live, exist, survive, and keep their culture, their history alive, it's the music of Ireland that tells the story that of a country and of a people that in just about every other place in the world, it was written down and printed somewhere, but that was forbidden. So
yes, that's right. Absolutely. You're absolutely right, Stephanie. I've always said that our music and song was the reason that we were never conquered. And, you know, if there's one thing that the attempted conquest of Ireland by England over the years, over the centuries, the one thing that it produced was that it produced fierce resistance because not only did the authorities in London want the submission of the Irish people, but they also wanted to destroy forever the culture, the language, the traditions, and the heritage of the people. And that makes the attempt at conquest very different from other wars and people that fought with each other across Europe, because even among sworn enemies across Europe, there was respect indeed for the arts and talents of the people that conquered. They didn't want to destroy forever the beautiful poetic poetry and music and language, but because of the nature of England's attempt at conquest, wanting to destroy not just the heritage, but every aspect of it, and you know, that's really that prompted fierce resistance from the Irish people, and of course that's expressed in songs and music and down through the years, and it's a powerful. A powerful culture that's written and that is part and now indeed of Irish heritage.
Well, I got to tell you something strange that happened that I just found out about. When I saw you the other night, I asked you about a particular song and if it was in the public domain. Because if it were in the public domain, I would use it in ways that I can't use it if it's not in the public domain. And I thought it was an Irish folk song. And I asked you if the song, Some Say the Devil is Dead, is in the public domain, because I didn't realize that's not some old traditional Irish folk tune. And when you answered me, all you said to me when I saw you the other night was, no, that's not in public domain. So I went online to do a little research about the song, and it was quite the shock to me, Mr. Warfield, to learn that that you wrote it. I had no idea. And even when I asked you, I mean, you humble soul, you didn't say, well, of course not in the public domain. I wrote the thing.
Yeah. Well, you have to remember that, Stephanie, you know, you mentioned another song the other night, Four Green Fields. Tommy Makem wrote that song, but he never wanted to claim it. He gave it to the people of Ireland. He gave it to the people that love music. And it's sometimes the authorship or composer of a song in Irish tradition was not the highest, was not the thing that was most important to the authors or composers. It was the message and the communication that song was giving to people was probably the most important thing for many of them. So you have to understand, like, songs are the way people communicated in Ireland for years ago, I think I might have said it before, Stephanie, you know, Ireland had no really institute that protected our intellectual property, so it was left to ordinary people to propagate and to ideas and to suggest indeed the ways to resist to the oppressive nature of the laws that were introduced to prevent the expression of Ireland, Irish tradition in Ireland. And I've always I say it repeatedly to white people, when Irish people came to America, they could do one thing here in America that they couldn't do in English-controlled Ireland, and that is they could be Irish. And they could be Irish without fear of retribution. You couldn't do that in Ireland under an English rule, because the attempted, what English authority attempted to do was to make Ireland English. Now, they succeeded in transposing the language. We speak the English language, but they couldn't change, indeed, the people's the nature of their identity and nationality.
Well, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come right back, because I've got the next piece of what I learned when I went online looking for more information about the song Some Say the Devil Is Dead. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. Don't leave me. We're talking with Derek Warfield, who founded both the Wolf Tones and the Young Wolf Tones. So we'll be right back, don't leave.
Be the pixie mythico and mythico and mythico. Be the pixie mythico and early in the morning. Hook a leg of paddy dear, I'm over here. Hook a leg of paddy dear, it's linked to stop your yawning. Some say the devil is dead, the devil is dead, the devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead and buried in Killarney. More say he rose again, more say he rose again.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Derek Warfield, founder of both the Wolf Tones and the Young Wolf Tones. And I have to tell you, I love the Young Wolf Tones. I mean, we used to love the Wolf Tones and buy all of their albums. But the Young Wolf Tones make a bigger, deeper, more luscious sound. And I have to tell you, part of that I can attribute to, you know, each of the wonderful people who are part of the Young Wolf Tones. But Damaris Woods and her banjo, wow, she's remarkable. And she really adds something very special to listening to the music of the Young Wolf Tones. But, you know, Derek, we were talking about the history of Ireland being captured forever in the music of Ireland because of the imposition of all kinds of insane rules by the Brits were controlling, you know, who got to read and who got to go to school and doing their best to. Well, you know, I had a very good friend. Regrettably, he's passed away. I don't know if you knew Martin McCrossum.
Martin, I didn't know, but
name.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he started out with Derry City Tours, and then they developed it into...
Oh, I do. I know of him. I know the man you're talking about now.
Yeah.
This
month, it's, I guess February, was probably 5 years since he passed on. And he was a very good friend. And he was Catholic, grew up in Derry. And that was a very oppressive time in Derry for people who were Catholic. And in school, he learned all about British history. And there wasn't a page in any of his school books in his entirety of his education about Irish history.
And you know, that you hit on something very, very profound there. And that is one of the reasons why there's been so much censorship on Irish song. Because Irish songs remind the world by that oppressive nature of the laws that wanted to eradicate, indeed, any expression of Irish identity. So, those laws go back to the 16th century.
Oliver Cromwell.
This is hard to believe, but there was a law introduced back in the 1630s. If you held a manuscript or a book of ancient Ireland in your possession, you were liable, indeed, to be imprisoned or hanged at worst, your family to be dumped out of their homes. So anyone that held a manuscript from ancient Ireland was liable, indeed, to be a target. So that was one way that the authorities in London wanted to completely destroy the heritage, the written language of Gaelic, which is the oldest written language in Europe. And they wanted to completely destroy it. And, of course, they didn't succeed because always among oppressed races like that, and you will know this being Jewish yourself, that there's always some, indeed, writers or analysts that will persevere and preserve the literature and collect it and it brings a determination to keep it alive. And that's what happened in the 17th century. A lot of scribes and analysts got together, and they preserved the remnants that hadn't been destroyed. There's an old saying in Gaelic, and I'll translate it for you, that they stole the silver and drowned the books.
Wow.
And there's another an old saying that after the destruction of Clonmacnoise University and Clonfert, it was said that if all the scribes in Ireland sat down for the rest of their lives, they would only replace a thimbleful of what was lost and now gone forever.
Oh, my gosh. But you know what? I have to tell you. I started to tell you about how I went to look for... I don't know what got me started on Some Say... And for those of you who don't... Why don't you sing a little bit of Some Say the Devil Is Dead?
The devil is dead, the devil is dead, the devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead and buried in Killarney. More say he rose again. More say he rose again. More say he rose again and joined the British Army.
So I got to...
Mystico and Mystico and Mystico. Feed the pigs of Mystico and early in the morning. Cut your leg, Paddy dear, I'm over here. Cut your leg, Paddy dear, it's time to stop your yawning. Some say the devil is dead, the devil is dead, the devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead, buried in Killarney. How was that?
That was grand. So I went home from the concert the other night of the Young Wolf Tones in Springfield, Massachusetts, with that in my head. And I went online to get some information, and that's when I discovered you actually wrote that. I thought it was some traditional folk song from who knows how long ago. I stumbled across something that I found very troubling. So troubling that I have to tell you that had I known this story before I was approached by Bradley International Airport in Hartford and Aer Lingus to sponsor my show when they started flying from Hartford. Had I known this story, I would have said, thank you very much, but we'll pass. And what I discovered when I went online, that it pained me deeply, because we're not talking about Oliver Cromwell in the 1600s. We're talking about the 2000s. And I came across a story about two men who are part of British government, who are flying on an Aer Lingus flight, where you will find in the onboard in-flight entertainment, music, movies, TV, and there's a whole separate section that's Irish everything. Irish films, Irish TV, Irish music. And apparently there was a Derek Warfield channel on the in-flight entertainment. These two men were disturbed by the nature of the songs, which tell so much of the history of Ireland and the repressiveness of the British. And they apparently, according to what I read online, wrote a letter to the head of Aer Lingus that this was very disturbing and just brought back to mind these uncomfortable memories that they'd like to be disassociated from. And so the result was they got an apology and your channel was removed. I have to tell you, there are movies on flights that I don't want to watch. They're filled with car chases and murder and rape and killing and ugly stuff. And you know what I do? I watch another channel. I don't go to the airline and tell them, let me impose once again something that smacks of British rule to remove something that doesn't suit me. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come right back. This is Stephanie Abrams. Don't leave me. No, we're going to come back and talk about it. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. Don't leave.
Sure aren't we all Irish anyhow? Now is the time to step together now. We're on the one road, sharing the one road. We're on the road to God knows where. We're on the one road, and maybe the wrong road, but we're together.
Stephanie Abrams Travel Show is brought to you by Amtrak. It's time to see New York and save 15% with Amtrak. Plan your 15% saving getaway today at Amtrak.com and click on deals and look for See New York and save 15%.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
We're back talking with Derek Warfield, and who is the founder of the Young Wolf Tones, which was preceded by a musical group called the Wolf Tones that he founded. And we were just talking about, or at least I was talking about, something I fell upon online when I went after the concert that Derek and his group, the Young Wolf Tones, performed just recently in Springfield, Massachusetts. I went online to find out more information about the song Some Say the Devil is Dead. In finding that information, I learned two things. One, Derek wrote the song. It's not some 150 or, you know, 100-year-old, well, at this point, maybe 110-year-old folk song. Something that was more recently written and written by Derek Warfield. But I stumbled across a story about a request from two men who were, I think, parliamentarians, but they were politicians in Britain, who were put out that Derek's music, which tells the story, for the most part, of the struggle of the Irish to maintain their culture, their identity, and the realism of their history, not the revisionism history that we sometimes see. I mean, I loved when I go to England to go to the library and read about the American Revolution. First of all, there is no such thing. They call it the Colonial Uprising. And what you read about George Washington as a terrible general, a terrible statistician who had no idea how to run an army, you never get the impression when you read the story of the American Revolution when you are in the UK that we won. It's not told that way. So, and well, I'll tell you that story another time, but I was really disturbed.
Can I add something to that?
Please.
You won't read in the accounts of the American Revolution that the English authority hold the worst record for the treatment of political prisoners. There were more American political prisoners that died in prison than died on the field of battle, because the British government wanted to make sure that when they were victorious and quelling the rebellion, that these people would be dead. So the prison ships in New York Harbor and in Charlestown Harbor indeed were responsible for the deaths of more volunteers than any of the battles. I think around 15,000 political prisoners died in the extreme conditions that they were subjected to. And you won't read that in any of the accounts of the American Revolution. It's a Disney World account, indeed.
You're right.
The revolution you get in England. But to go back to the business of these English politicians objecting to the songs because they reveal the parts of the history of the treatment of English authority by the Irish people. That's nothing got to do with offence. It's everything, again, once again, to do with control. The control in Spain, indeed, of ideas and the revision of history and presented in a light that doesn't make English authority look bad, which was dreadful. It's a shameful, indeed, a shameful past and that it has in dealing with Ireland and in dealing with any country, indeed, across what was then the British Empire.
Well, you know, their mode of their method of operation was to divide any group of people where they came in to occupy into two camps and set the people, the local people, to hate each other, fight each other, and shoot at each other so they wouldn't shoot at the Brits. And they did it in India and Pakistan, and they did it in Botswana, and they did it in Israel and Palestine, and they did it in Ireland. I mean, anywhere they went, that was the method of control. Divide the people and make them hate each other. And then have them shoot at each other so they don't shoot at them. Did you see the film? Did you see the film A United Kingdom about Botswana?
No, I didn't. But I mean, nothing would surprise me. I mean, they had I think there was an Indian author that described English authority as the masters of disasters. the masters of disasters, they operate around the world, and they really they divided India in a couple of weeks. They tore apart communities that had been together. They put a border in Ireland, and we've lived for 10,000 years in that country without a border, and they imposed one in 1920. I mean, these people, I think the Indian author described them correctly, masters of disasters.
It's unbelievable.
And fanatical martyrs, masters of disasters. That's the term he used also.
Well, I was sorry that life got in the way. Derek Warfield is on tour, and he had to leave us, regrettably. But there's a lot we still need to delve in on that. I think there is something, there's something wrong with people caving into demands that don't make sense to me. If the Derek Warfield musical channel was the only choice, and there seemed to be, I don't know, negative response to it, then you kind of understand that maybe you need to offer something else. You ever fly on an international flight? Some of the finest in-flight entertainment systems are on international flights because you're on the plane for a long time. You fly from the East Coast to Asia, you might be on the plane 16, 19 hours. They have a much more robust in-flight program than you're going to find on a flight that's an hour or an hour and a half. I've been on far too many planes where there is no in-flight anything. You better bring your own headset and your own entertainment. You know, whatever it is that you can put into airplane mode and still pick up, you know, your own music or stories or bring a book or whatever, because there is nothing in flight. We flew from Miami to Costa Rica. I don't think there was any in-flight entertainment on that flight. You fly from Miami or Fort Lauderdale up the East Coast or across the nation, yeah, you're more than likely going to have something on board. When you get into the international market, one of the things that airlines compete with is what they offer in flight. I mean, Virgin Atlantic has always had one of the number one best in-flight entertainment systems going. And the thing that I always found really interesting about that was that they would leave the entertainment on even after the plane was at the gate. So if you wanted to see the end of something or more of something, far too many airlines, somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour before you land, that is a long time, people, they turn off the entertainment system. Now, and my question is, if Virgin Atlantic can leave it on right up to the gate when it's time for you to stand up and get off the plane, then why can't everybody else? Why do they have to turn it off 45 minutes to an hour before you land? And I can tell you at least three DVDs I have bought because the in-flight entertainment got turned off about 10 minutes before the end of a movie. One of those movies I just saw on Netflix or somebody. It's called Conviction. Maybe it was HBO. I don't remember. It's about a woman who goes to law school in Massachusetts, Massachusetts resident, and she goes to law school in order to save her brother on appeal for being convicted for something he didn't do. Can you imagine? You see the whole movie and you miss the last 10 minutes? We'll be right back. Don't leave me.
It was far across the sea when the devil got a hold of me. He wouldn't set me free, so he kept me sold for ransom. I'm a sailor man from Glasgow town. I've roamed this world around and round. It's the meanest thing that I have found in all me days of wonder.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
Well, I was talking about in-flight entertainment on airlines, which got started from my discovering, as one would say in French, par hasard, by accident. I was looking for something, and I fell upon a story about my friend, Derek Warfield, founder of both the Young Wolf Tones and prior to that, the Wolf Tones, who is truly a historian. He is not only a scholar as it relates to Irish history, but American history as well, because American history is very tied up in Irish history, or the history of Irish immigrants. Kind of a funny subject to come to, given so much negative bantering that we hear about the lack of value of immigrants. But next time I get Derek on, I'm so sorry he had to be called away, but he is on tour, and so there are priorities. But what's amazing to me is that I have learned so much about American history, and I studied American history. I taught American history. So much of what I have learned from Derek was in nothing in any book that or any class teachings I was ever privy to prior to learning from him. But so many, I don't think he mentioned it today, but 16, I think it was, of George Washington's generals or officers were Irish. And I'll share this with you that I found fascinating. Prior to the American Revolution, and there were Irishmen coming over in the mid-1600s to escape from Oliver Cromwell's reign. You know the expression, by hook or by crook? There are two places in Ireland near Waterford, on the southern coast of Ireland. One is called Crook's Head, and the other is called Hook. And Oliver Cromwell wanted control of Waterford because it's in an ideal strategic location. And he was that fellow in England who was responsible for the end of the concept that the king was descended directly from God. Therefore, you could not kill the king, which is the same reason you can't capture the king in a chess game. Because the king had ruled by divine right. So you couldn't kill the king. You could lock him up, but you couldn't kill him. Until Cromwell made sure that Charles was killed. And one of the places, if you're interested in history, that you want to go is in Chester, England. You want to go to the Tower of Chester, where they locked the king up. And at the end of that story is, here was the secular fellow, Cromwell, who was in charge, and he imposed all these rules in Ireland about, you know, you couldn't. I only learned about having a book today in Irish that I didn't know before. I learned with you from Derek. But if you were trying to teach an Irish child to read or write or do arithmetic, you were subject to instant execution. Friendly little group. So that came down under Cromwell. from England. And so he wanted Waterford. And he told his soldiers and sailors, I want Waterford, and I want you to take Waterford by hook or by crook, which has crept into our language to mean, when you say, well, get it by hook or by crook, we mean, well, by any means necessary, you make sure you go and get it. But that came because of those two towns on the southern coast of Ireland. Isn't that interesting? I knew you'd like that one. Oh, there's a whole list of them. Maybe we'll do that next week or the week after. I'll run through some expressions we use all the time that are Irish, delivered to us from Ireland. But one of the things I learned from Derek was that during the time of Cromwell, when there were many Irishmen coming to what was known then as the American colonies, that was in the 1600s, 1700s, and in the early 1700s, the number of Irishmen and Irish descendants being born in the colonies was growing, but there was all the Irish attitudes and folklore and history related to the Brits. So there was already this kind of anti-British sentiment in the colonies. Many of the people who emigrated from Ireland were teachers. And when they got to the colonies, part of what they were teaching was history related to what happened with Cromwell in Ireland. So there was already this anti-British disposition of decades of people who were schooled in the colonies learning about the oppression of the British on the Irish. So when it came time for the Revolutionary War, which in the UK they call the Colonial Uprising. So if you want to go and do some research, you'll find it. I spent 2 hours looking in a million books in the library in Chester, England, trying to find their interpretation of the American Revolution. And the first thing was I couldn't find the American Revolution. After a couple hours, I finally found the Colonial Uprising. But the Americans were already predisposed to the teachings of these Irish teachers who told them this kind of oppression, which we were experiencing here in the American colonies with taxation without representation and the glass tax and the stamp tax and the everything else that wasn't good, was the reason that there were people ready to be the Minutemen and stand up and be counted. And much of that is retold in stories that are written, but the Irish history is in song. And the thought that people today, in this century, could get on an airplane and complain because there are songs about Irish historical fact that they find objectionable because they're British and it needs to be shut it down. Nobody should be able to hear it because it doesn't make us sound good. Yeah, well, it's kind of how it is, folks. More on that subject another week. Come back next week. Gotta fly now.
Flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me. Let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.